Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNext session on Exchange 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. We'll start with a discussion about the pros and cons of the Exchange Server 2000-2003 message routing and transport services. We'll then take a look at the improvements made to transport and message routing in Exchange Server 2007, and highlights the benefits to both users and administrators resulting from these changes. We'll spend a little time comparing Exchange 2000-2003 with 2007, before running through a couple of demonstrations showing how to set up connectors between the hub and edge servers, and how to enable transport rules within your organization. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. Of particular relevance will be any knowledge you have related to routing groups and message routing topology in Exchange Server 2000-2003. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. To help manage the flow of the session, we've broken it down to three separate topics. As we proceed through the session, we'll return to this agenda before we move on to a new topic. In this part of the session, we'll discuss message routing in Exchange 2000-2003. We'll also touch on how administrators tried to implement server roles in legacy Exchange. In earlier versions of Exchange Server, such as Exchange 2000 Server, it was not easy to define roles for a specific server within an organization. The installation routine did not support the concept of specific server roles. When the administrator deployed a server, a multi-purpose, monolithic messaging engine was created. This server was able to perform all messaging functions. These include, first of all, message routing, messages that originate from users homed on a server that will be routed by a server in most circumstances. This involves determining the address space of a message, a route to the specific address, and where distribution lists, DLs, are involved, expanding those DLs to the individual recipient level. The server will need access to Active Directory to determine the home server for a given mailbox and, where appropriate, will need to determine a route to a remote recipient. We'll look more closely at message routing next. As well as the routing and DLL expansion roles, the server will be responsible for servicing client requests to access mail services. These clients will be connected through HTTP, POP, IMAP, and ActiveSync. Naturally, clients connected locally from Outlook will connect over RPC, so the server is responsible for accepting and servicing client requests from a variety of different clients over a number of quite different protocols. The mailbox role is perhaps the most crucial, inasmuch as without it, there is no email. The server manages access to the various mail databases, both private and public, installed locally. It must provide secure and high-speed access for client requests. And at the same time must provide a high degree of fault tolerance and recoverability. To this end, the disk subsystems are optimized to provide good throughput, but also to provide disk fault tolerance. Often administrators consider the use of clustered servers to provide for high availability, especially critical messaging environments. The final server role is somewhat related to the mailbox role, inasmuch as access to mailboxes is just one type of database access. Public folder servers also provide access to public databases installed by default on all servers. The key difference is that when a message is emailed, routing takes place to determine the appropriate recipient's home database. While users tend to post items to public folders, routing does not take place as clients have an open connection to the public folder when they submit their post. This process is different from handling client requests to mailboxes. In addition, public folders are often multi-instance items, that is, a public folder may have a replica installed on several servers within an organization. This provides fault tolerance and load balancing. However, it places yet another burden on the server, and that of synchronizing the public folder content. Although it's true to say that with Exchange 2000X, it is possible to configure procedural roles such as dedicated public folder server or front-end server, all other services were still installed and running. In addition, this post-installation customization didn't produce an ideal server configuration. The Exchange product group realized this is a drawback and separated these functions into two distinct types of containers in Exchange 2000. Let's take a closer look at the routing function within Exchange 2000 and 2003, but first a quick word about the Exchange 5 sites. In Exchange 5.5 and earlier, container objects called sites were used to define groups of servers connected by high-speed, persistent network links. These sites, with their groups of servers, provided administrative boundaries. Anyone with administrative permissions on the site could administer all servers within the site. In addition, the site was a routing boundary. When messages passed between servers within a site, RPC communication was used, and no special scheduling was used to send a message. However, when messages needed to pass between sites, connectors were used. Traffic passing over the connector was compressed, passed between specific bridgehead servers, and utilized a predefined schedule. These connectors, like sites, were manually defined by the administrator and utilized by the popular X400. Message addressing and routing protocol. Although the X400 was a sensible choice for message routing in the early 90s, the rise in the use of the internet and SMTP means it doesn't fit quite as well now. There are a number of problems with this model, most notably that the administrative and routing purpose of a site could not be separated. The Exchange product group realized that this was a drawback and separated these functions into two distinct types of containers in Exchange 2000. In Exchange 2000, routing groups and administrative groups were introduced. This allowed the administrator to create collections of servers for administrative purposes, without compromising the routing architecture, which must surely map to the physical topology of the network on which it resides. Now, the administrator could create groups of servers based on the physical location where they were installed. Furthermore, servers could be easily moved between routing groups as the physical topology of the network changed. Each routing group had to be configured with a routing group master. The master was responsible for determining whether routes were available to remote routing groups. As routes failed, announcements were made by the discovering server, that is, the server that attempted to utilize a route and discovered that it was unavailable, and the routing group master updated its linked state table accordingly. It then propagated the information to adjacent routing group masters, if possible, so they, in turn, could update the link state tables and propagate the update to other routing group member servers. As with Exchange 5X, connectors were needed to enable message flow between routing groups. A variety of connector types existed, primarily based on the SMTP protocol rather than the X400. This reflected the changing messaging world in which Exchange 2000 operated. One in which the internet and SMTP was more important than older but less established standards. Generally, connectors utilized specific messaging bridgeheads. Additional servers were deployed into each routing group to service and support access to mailboxes and public folders. These servers could be clustered for high availability and were often referred to as back-end servers, or they were perfectly capable of supporting client access requests directly without front-end servers. Some administrators created dedicated public folder servers by removing the public folder stores from all but one server in each routing group and pointing all client requests to the remaining server through private store configuration changes. Generally speaking, in larger organizations, front-end servers were defined in the perimeter network, or more usually, an ISA server was deployed in the perimeter to forward requests to front-end servers within the intranet for added security. These servers received client access requests and handed them, on behalf of the client, to the appropriate back-end server. Although a number of protocols were supported in this manner, it was typically only Exchange ActiveSync and Outlook Web Access, which both use HTTP and HTTPS, that were used to any great degree. The front-end server could be clustered using network load balancing to provide for higher availability. It's important to note that all servers could support all the defined functions of client access, mailbox store, public folder store, and routing due to the monolithic nature of the Exchange Server 2000-2003. However, the smart administrator could make fine-tuned functional adjustments post-installation. Let's discuss some of the benefits of the Exchange 2000 routing model. One of the main benefits of the legacy Exchange routing model was that the messages were queued at the point of failure. It's interesting to note that Exchange 2000 shipped without this feature and was subsequently added after the product was released to the market. The reason this is important is that mail tends to queue up at major hubs, like head office, allowing the messaging administrators to notice it more quickly. And because the messages were queued in one location, to find a better solution to the problem. It's not helpful to mail to queue at remote locations, where the problem exists somewhere else. The product crew wanted to keep the benefits of queuing mail at the point of the problem in Exchange Server 2007. Although bandwidth control was pretty good in Exchange 2000-2003, it was configured manually, with quite a bit of administrative effort. So, bandwidth control is critical, but it needs to be made more accessible to administrators. Finally, Exchange 2000-2003 handled delayed fan-out reasonably well, and it's important this continued through into Exchange Server 2007. Delayed fan-out is the result of a number of processes that ensure that a message destined for multiple recipients gets as far along its delivery route before it becomes multi-instance. That is, if a message is addressed from half a dozen users on different servers around the organization, and the message originates from a location connected with a high latency slow links, it's undesirable to create 6 copies of the originating server, unless there is no alternative. So this great feature needed to be available in 2007, but where possible, made better. Let's return to the agenda for a moment. In this section, we're going to introduce Exchange Server 2007 server roles and discuss changes in the routing topology in Exchange 2007. At the end of this section, we'll run through a demo on configuring Edge Sync. We've mentioned sites, but what's happened to routing groups? Exchange Server 2007 server roles fall into one of two broad categories. One role is designed to be deployed at the perimeter network, outside the corporate intranet with no access to Active Directory. And all other roles are designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called the Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it's not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, ADAM, installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the Hub Transport Server. This role can be combined with others when required. The Client Access Server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP, and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does in 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access or message routing, as these are handled by the other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on the given task. The unified messaging server is all new and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a UM server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange and handles voice calls and provides answering services, as well as providing voicemail. It's important that you understand that these are server roles. You can combine these roles during installations so that a single physical server computer handles multiple roles. It's not necessary to purchase a separate physical computer to support each role, although that may be desirable in certain situations. Next, we'll look at how you might implement these roles to support your organization's messaging needs. We'll step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about the message that arrives at your organization. The Edge Transport Service sits isolated on the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the Connection Filtering Agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions on the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution, like Microsoft Exchange hosted services. Once the message is deemed safe, the Edge passes along to the Hub Transport Server. Connectors are defined on both the Edge Transport and Hub Transport servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communications between the edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. Note the Edge Sync subscription process, which we'll run through in our demo, can create all the necessary connectors for you. On arrival at the Hub Transport Server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require that you store a message for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may also, for example, have your own internal organizational regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages. The transport agents provided in Exchange running on the Edge and Hub servers allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one Hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The Hub Transport Server now passes the message to the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from an MAPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through Exchange ActiveSync, Outlook Web Access, OWA, Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. Client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one that is in the same site as their mailbox server. This can take the form of either redirection, that is telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You also need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the all-new Unified Messaging Server can link your PBX with your email. If a user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If a user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA, and EAS clients provide in-message controls to hear and respond to these voice messages. We've mentioned sites, but what happened to routing groups? Well, they're still supported. To ensure proper compatibility with Exchange 2000 and 2003, Exchange Server 2007 must support routing groups in such a way as to be transparent to the legacy servers, which it does. We'll discuss this later, but 2007 no longer relies on routing groups to be defined. Instead, it utilizes the underlying IP networks to make routing decisions. It can also utilize the Active Directory topology in terms of sites, site links, and site link bridges where appropriate. This makes life a lot easier, as these network characteristics only need to be defined once, when Active Directory is installed, rather than again when messaging is added. Once an Active Directory administrator has defined the IP topology in terms of subnets and physical sites, all client computers, server computers, and domain controllers know where they are in terms of the physical world. This makes message routing decisions, together with service access decisions, informed rather than arbitrary. As this session details with transport and routing services, we'll focus on two transport server roles now. The Edge Transport Server provides the foundation for a secure messaging environment. The role cannot be combined with any other Exchange Server roles, but you may also install ISA Server on the same computer. ISA can perform redirection to servers on the internal network, for example, client access servers. The Edge server is lean. It runs only the services required to perform its function, providing a clean message stream. It has no access to anything sensitive, and the physical isolation provides additional security. In the event that the Edge server becomes compromised, as it is not part of the enterprise, and indeed does not have access to much that is in the enterprise, the security compromise cannot proceed further. To enable the Edge server to pass messages to the appropriate Hub server, it requires recipient information. This is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, or ADAM, This is made available from the Hub Server ODLV app using port 1389 and is read-only at the edge. You can determine how much information to provide in this way at the edge. The Edge Transport Server ADAM is kept up to date using Edge Sync, a synchronization tool with the subset of Active Directory recipient information that you have made available. In addition to recipient data, some organization and routing data is also required. Let's discuss Edge Sync in a little more detail. Edge Sync is a collection of processes that run on the Exchange Server 2007 Hub Transport Server role to establish one-way replication of recipient and configuration information from the Active Directory servers to the Active Directory Application Mode ADAM instance on a computer that has the Edge Transport Server role installed. Edge Sync copies only the information that is required for the Edge Transport Server to perform anti-spam configuration tasks, as well as information about the send connector's configuration that is required to enable mail flow from the Exchange 2007 Organization Hub's transport servers to the Internet through one or more Edge transport servers. Edge Sync performs scheduled updates so that the information in ADAM remains current. An Edge transport server subscribes to an Active Directory site. It is associated with the Hub transport servers in that site for the purpose of configuring the connectors that are replicated to ADAM during this process. The Hub transport servers in the organization will then route messages that are being delivered to the Internet to the site with which the Edge transport server is associated for onward relay to the Edge transport server itself, and then to the Internet. When data is sent to the ADAM from Active Directory, it is sent hashed to protect the data. The LDAP connection is secured by the ADAM credential stored in the Edge subscription file. Edge Sync replicates the following data from Active Directory to ADAM: send connector configuration, accepted domains, remote domains, safe sender lists, and recipients. Let's discuss the Edge server's other responsibilities. A well-designed security infrastructure should deliver on two goals: simple to manage, built-in protection, and reduced costs. From the Edge transport server perspective, if you look at the two concepts of built-in protection and reduced costs and complexity, the goal of the Edge transport server is to keep your emails safe, thereby keeping the inbox safe and free from viruses, malware, or spam. A number of agents are provided on the Edge server. These include the address rewrite agent, the connection filter agent, the recipient filter agent, the sender filter agent, the sender ID agent, the content filter agent, and the protocol analysis agent. Together, these agents analyze incoming messages to identify viruses, spam, and other undesirable content. In addition to these agents, the Edge can also be configured with a per-user safe senders list. If you look at email use on the Internet today, historically, companies communicate in the clear. There's a sense of security, which is interesting, since communications are completely unsecured. Exchange Server needs a way to ensure messages security over untrusted networks, so the Edge server has the ability to protect business-to-business communications over both trusted and untrusted networks, keeping email not only safe, but also more secure. Exchange Server provides a simple way to manage these communications with partners by establishing partnerships and enabling the level of security that you require with a given partner. And providing a highly available transport reduces the downtime, so the product group has included several features in the transport services, in the Edge services specifically, in Exchange 2007 that allow for a high availability of messaging. It's worth noting that this message hygiene can also be deployed at the Hub server in smaller organizations where no Edge server will be deployed. In this instance, smaller organizations might consider the use of hosted services to provide a clean message stream into the organization. You configure transport rules on the Edge transport server that provide message filtering. Filtering enables the Edge transport server to help eliminate spam, viruses, and other unsafe content, providing improved message hygiene before it arrives within your organization. To allow messages to flow to and from the organization, you'll also need to configure connectors to the Hub transport service in your forest. Remember that configuring Edge Sync can help with this process. Because the Edge transport server is a standalone, you can use a customized version of the Exchange Management Console. This is run locally at the Edge server. Let's discuss the Hub transport role next. The primary responsibility of the Hub server is to provide message routing within your organization. It's always used and never bypassed. Even when two users are on the same database exchange email, the hub server is engaged. This level of predictability is desirable because it means that you always know where messages are going to go and how they're going to get there, which means the troubleshooting is easier. Removing the guessing game from routing reduces tremendously the maintenance costs associated with the email backbone. By having the ability to route based on decided affinity, Exchange Server is going to be far simpler to deploy and manage. You need to deploy at least one hub server per Active Directory site where mailbox servers will be deployed. To ensure communications to Exchange Server 2003, connectors must be created to the routing groups. From the Exchange Server 2003 end, the connector looks just like a routing group connector. When Exchange Server 2007 servers are added to the existing legacy Exchange organization, they are added in their own administrative group called Exchange Administrative Group brackets random identifier. In addition, the servers are grouped for routing purposes in their own routing group called Exchange Routing Groups brackets random identifier. The Hub Transport Service is the entity responsible for providing confidentiality and tamper-proof communications within the enterprise, and also for preventing leakage from happening outside the enterprise. Exchange Server provides a solution for establishing and maintaining a high-level security and confidentiality that doesn't require IT staff to manage and maintain any sort of certificate infrastructure. The Hub has built-in rules to enable you to enforce that certain types of communication should never leave the organization, or that they should only go through secure channels to certain partners, for example. For retaining the communications you need, again, the Hub has the ability to do that, to control where messages should be archived, and it provides a much higher level of granularity than Exchange 2003 does. 2007 improves quite substantially the journaling infrastructure, provides a feature set that enables you to comply with regulatory information retention. And again, all that contributes to your being compliant. From a point of view of high availability, Exchange Server 2007 has built-in facilities to protect against poison messages, that is, messages with a damaging payload attached or embedded. Much more advanced message tracking and logging capability, as well as the redundancy of the servers in single site and cross sites. All of this contributes to a highly available messaging backbone from a transport perspective. Let's look at administering the transport roles. In addition to the connectors that you define on the Edge Transport Server, you must define connectors on the Hub Transport Server. Exchange Server uses the connectors to route messages between the appropriate Edge Transport Server and other Hub Transport Servers. You can also configure the Hub Transport Server with transport rules. These transport rules consist of conditions, actions, and exceptions that filter all messages and determine what action to take on each message. Filtering enables the Hub Transport Server to provide improved message hygiene to messages within your organization. By using transport rules, you can create an ethical firewall to ensure that inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Now let's take a look at our first demo. In this demo, we'll take a look at configuring the Edge. We will use Edge Sync to configure ADAM stored at the Edge Transport Server using the Exchange Management Console on the Hub Transport Server. In this first demonstration, we're going to use Edge Sync to create and configure an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, ADAM, on the Edge Transport Server. The process starts on the Edge Transport Server. A subscribed Edge Transport Server receives the following from the Edge Sync service: send connector configuration, accepted domain configuration, remote domain configuration, save sender lists, and recipients. Now we start configuring the Edge Sync services by creating an export file on the Edge server. Let's open the PowerShell. We'll use the new Edge subscription command and specify the export file name, which we'll place in the root of C. The PowerShell command copies the necessary configuration information to an XML file. The file contains the information required by the Hub Transport Server to configure the ADAM at the Edge. We will copy the file to the Hub Transport Server in a moment. If you have multiple Edge servers, you will need to subscribe each of them in this way. Now let's copy that file to SMB EX01. We'll just use the built-in administrative-only root share. We'll put it in the more logical location when we switch to the Hub server in a moment. It's good practice to delete the file that remains on the Edge server. Let's switch to the Hub Transport server and continue the process. First, let's verify that the file copied successfully from the Edge server. We open my computer and look at the root of drive C. The file is there, so let's put it in a more logical location. Let's create a folder called Edge Sync. Move the file into that. Now we're going to create a new Edge subscription. Open up Organization Configuration, click Hub Transport, and then click the Edge Subscriptions tab. Start the new Edge subscription wizard from the Action pane. We'll specify the site name. The Edge server will obtain its Active Directory information from the Hub servers in the specified site. In this case, it's the default site. Next, we select the Edge subscription export file that we created previously and stored in the Edge Sync folder. That contains all the information needed for the Edge Sync service to connect to the Edge server. We create the subscription. Note, you can also use the shell to complete this process. The subscriber process has created the necessary send connector for the organization as part of the new Edge subscription process. On a Hub Transport server, the Edge Sync service synchronizes configuration data hourly and recipient data every 4 hours out to the Edge Transport server. You can also force synchronization with the Starch Edge synchronization shell command. However, we'll return to the presentation. Now let's return to the agenda. In this session, we'll take a closer look at the process of routing messages in Exchange Server 2007. Let's start with an overview of the routing process. Communications from the Hub server to the Edge server to synchronize ADAM over Edge Sync occurs using LDAP port 1389. SMTP communication between the Edge and Hub servers takes place using Transport Layer Security, or TLS. This enhances security in transit. Kerberos authentication cannot be used as the Edge server is not part of the Active Directory forest. Communication between the Hub servers, again SMTP, is automatically secured using TLS, this time with Kerberos authentication as all servers are part of the same forest. Let's look at this in more detail. All message routing is now direct relay, which means that the Hub prefers direct IP connectivity between the source and the destination to route messages. The Hub will avoid redundant intermediate computer transfers. We rely on IP networks for messages rerouting in case of network failures. Direct relay is hub-to-hub, inter-site. The relay uses SMTP. Inter-site relay uses MAPI communication, which is RPC-based. The Hubs use deterministic routing and no longer rely on Exchange Link State tables, which showed the status of links between routing groups in Exchange 2003. As a consequence, Exchange 2007 doesn't consume or propagate linked state information. In addition, unless there is some sort of failure on the network, the Hub Transport server will always use the same route from source to destination. Deterministic routing means that the route between the source and destination is determined before transmission occurs between source and destination. The routing topology is automatically generated, so you don't need to configure connectors to get messages flowing. Because the Exchange Server 2007 topology is based on the Active Directory sites, many organizations can rely on these default connectors, especially if the existing routing group design was based on Active Directory sites. In fact, the Exchange routing table is a subset of site topology. One final note, co-located Hub servers have higher precedence than those located on other computers. That is, mailbox servers that also host the Hub role will utilize the locally installed hub rather than another hub in the local site. A couple of last points before we talk about mail flow. A mailbox server will submit messages to any hub server in a site, although, as we saw just a moment ago, precedence is given to co-hosted hub roles. An email is routed by a hub, even email destined for a mailbox on the same server as the originator's mailbox. Hubs automatically load balance within a site, so no single server will become a bottleneck within the routing topology. In legacy Exchange, rich head servers could constrain the flow of messages because of their additional workload, while other servers may have stood idle on the same routing group. Because of the logical topology is Active Directory based, all administration can be performed centrally using the Active Directory administration tools. Next, we'll look at how messages actually flow through the organization Exchange Server 2007 and contrast that with legacy Exchange. By default, the physical network IP layer is used to route messages between hubs or between a hub server and the appropriate mailbox server. This direct relay is highly desirable as a mechanism for transferring mails between any two points. If there's a problem with routing mail, Exchange Server relies on the underlying network layer to resolve the problem. In most cases, direct relay is available. But where it's not, Active Directory sites provide a logical layer that defines a physical grouping of servers, provides a back-off path used by hub transport servers only if direct relay isn't possible. Even here, messages are routed directly to the target site, and intermediate exchange servers that are simply going to relay the message onwards, are avoided. This is far more efficient than having messages relayed through multiple exchange hub servers, where no processing is actually taking place. It's worth noting that all Active Directory sites and their respective links are already configured, so there's no configuration of the Exchange routing environment required. It's totally automatic. In legacy Exchange, routing groups were an Exchange-specific logical layer and defined to a next hop resolution that was always used to advanced mail. The disadvantage of this approach was that the administrator needed to create the additional logical layer, with all its attendant connectors and so forth. Messages need to flow through intermediate hosts to get to their destination. This was wasteful of network bandwidth and of server processing. In addition, if an immediate host failed, mail backed up at the point of failure, even though direct IP relay was possible. So the Exchange Server 2007 routing mechanism, preferring a direct relay method over logical server grouping like routing groups, provided more efficient, fault-tolerant, and easier-to-administer routing platform. Next, we'll take a look at routing messages in a larger enterprise environment. Let's continue with the comparison between Exchange Server 2007 and Legacy Exchange. We'll spend a couple of minutes comparing the different approaches to routing in Legacy Exchange and Server Exchange 2007. Exchange Server 2007 uses Direct Relay, which takes advantage of the underlying network topology to find the most efficient direct route between source and destination, avoiding any superfluous hops along the way. In the event of a problem with a predetermined route, and remember that Exchange 2007 always uses the same route unless a problem exists with it, 2007 selects an alternative route from those available in the network. This avoids consuming resources, such as network bandwidth and server processing capacity, resulting from the approach taken by the legacy Exchange platforms, where all intermediate hops from source to destination were used as defined by the logical routing topology. Exchange 2000-2003 didn't take advantage of the underlying network to provide for efficient message routing. Legacy Exchange required an administrator to design the routing topology, routing groups, routing group masters, connectors, bridgeheads, and so forth, while Exchange 2007 doesn't require any additional design over and above that's already implemented for Active Directory. This includes the definition and configuration of connector objects, which in 2007 are automatically created. A significant problem with Exchange 2000-2003 was figuring out exactly how messages were being routed from source to destination. This became especially complicated in larger messaging environments, with many routing groups and multiple connectors. In Exchange 2007, it's entirely transparent and totally deterministic, making troubleshooting far simpler. There's also no link state table, and consequently, no exchange of link state data. Both systems are supporting queuing at the point of failure, which has obvious benefits to administrators and troubleshooters. In Legacy Exchange, any restrictions that you wanted to impose in terms of message routing had to be configured as restrictions on each individual connector. This is no longer the case, as Exchange 2007 supports global transport rules, which allow you to define routing restrictions in a single place, and the rule will apply to all messages within the organization. Those of you familiar with Exchange 2003 will know that to get messages flowing to and from the internet and throughout your organization required that you establish and configure messaging connectors and protocol virtual servers. Although SMTP virtual servers were ready to service connectors to and from the internet, invariably they did not provide the appropriate configuration, they would need manual adjustment or configuration of SMTP connectors. There was no automatic way to get MessageFlow up and running. In Exchange 2007, you can use Edge Sync to get the connectors configured from the hub servers out to the edge and beyond onto the internet. Exchange 2000X admins will also know that trying to locate problems with MailFlow was never easy. No simple tools or diagnostic aids are provided to help resolve the problem. Exchange 2007 provides you with MailFlow Troubleshooting Wizard. We'll look at that in the demo. A major responsibility of the Exchange Server 2007 Hub Transport role was to provide support for compliance, that is, the ability to retain messages or modify messages in accordance with corporate policy or legal requirements. This was incredibly simple to establish in 2007 and very hard to implement in legacy Exchange. 2007 provides global, internal, and external rules that allow an administrator to quickly and easily define a compliance structure. The final point, Exchange 2007 makes it easier to support event syncs. That is, the ability to fire off an event when something happens. An example might be implementing a virus check when a message arrives with an attachment. While the server-side processing was possible in Exchange 2000X, it wasn't as easy to implement as it could have been. Because of the transport topology changes and the agent-based nature of the Edge and Hub transport servers, it will be easier to implement event syncs on the transport servers through the new agent concept. Next, we'll take a look at routing messages in larger enterprise environments. Let's examine the message as Exchange attempts to route it. We have an originator in Site 11 and a recipient in Site 21. While the most direct site-to-site route is available, 2007 will use direct relay where possible. First, Exchange uses its built-in routing table and determines that the best route to use is point-to-point direct relay from Hub Transport Server in Site 11 to a Hub Transport Server in Site 21. However, there's a problem with establishing a direct connection to the Hub Transport Server in Site 21. Maybe it's offline, or the physical IP route between Site 2 and Site 21 is down. So the originating hub determines that a direct connection to Site 2 is the next best option. It will attempt direct relay to a hub transport in Site 2. Assuming that's successful, when the hub server in Site 21 becomes available, because the IP route is reset or the server becomes online, then the hub server in Site 2 will pass the message along. Either way, this demonstrates queuing the message at the point of the problem. In this instance, somewhere between Site 2 and Site 21, there's a problem. If the originating hub server in Site 11 can't relay to the hub server in Site 2, it's primary back off. Then it determines the next best option is direct relay to a hub transport in Site 1. As before, when the problem is resolved, the hub in Site 1 will process the queued message. It will attempt direct relay to the hub in Site 21 rather than Site 2. If the originating server can't even direct relay to the hub in Site 1, it realizes it has nowhere left to go. And so the final backoff is to queue the message in Site 11, suggestive of a problem in the IP network between Site 11 and Site 1, or a server in Site 1. When the problem has been resolved, the originating server will attempt to reroute the message using its original direct relay to Site 11. Note that the site link costs is only used to determine the effective route when direct relay has failed. The Active Directory administrator will typically configure the site link costs to its representative of the underlying network link's reliability and or its availability. With high latency, low speed or non-persistent links having a higher cost value, it's possible for the Exchange administrator to assign Exchange-only cost values to these links. But remember, they are only effective when direct relay has failed. You may consider doing that when you really want to use a link in a certain circumstance. Let's see how this affects single instance messaging and bifurcation. In this example, we have two recipients in different sites for our piece of mail. The most direct site-to-site route to get to recipient 1 is Site 11, to Site 1, to Site 2, to Site 21. The best route to recipient 2 is Site 11, to Site 1, to Site 3, to Site 31. Now remember that we want a piece of email to get as far along the route to its destination as possible before it becomes multi-instance. The originating hub calculates that using direct relay, the best way to minimize the effects of bifurcation is a direct relay to a hub in Site 1. And then route copies from there using direct relay to Sites 21 and 31, Multiple recipients in different physical locations has changed the optimized route selected by the originating hub. To direct relay to recipient 1 in site 21 and recipient 2 in site 31 would require bifurcation at site 11, which is inefficient of both network bandwidth and the hub server processing capacity. So the server decides to route to site 1 and let the hub there handle the onwards relay. But we assume some standard site link costs here. If you make a change to site link cost between, say, site 1 and site 3, that might produce an interesting effect. Let's take a look at that. The link we've changed connects site 1 with site 3. We have the same recipients in the same destination sites as before. And the optimal site-to-site route for the first recipient hasn't changed. Site 11, site 1, site 2, site 21. But the route to recipient 2 changed because of the cost from site 1 to site 3. It's no better to go site 11, site 1, site 2, site 3, site 31, an extra hop, but a cheaper end-to-end cost. Now, the originating server calculates that the best bifurcation point is site 2. It uses direct relay to route the messages to a hub server in site 2, which in turn performs the bifurcation and uses direct relay to route to a hub in site 21 and site 31. So relatively modest change in the configuration that can have an interesting effect on the message routing. If you want, you can define explicit hub sites. This means that messages must be routed through them, rather than relying on IP network for direct relay. In essence, you end up with the same behavior that you would see in Exchange 2003. However, you don't need to configure things this way. Let's run through the same examples previously. The optimal paths for the message, bearing in mind the bifurcation point based on the site link cost between site 1 and site 2, has not changed from the previous example. From the originating site 11, as the message routing takes place, the direct relay extends only as far as the next site. An intervening hub server must handle the message in transit, so if you want to configure the routing infrastructure to use a messaging backbone that exhibits the same behavior as with Exchange 2003, you can certainly do this. To configure explicit hubs like this, use the set AD site PowerShell command. In legacy Exchange, if you wanted to place restrictions on mail flow, such as who could send externally, how attachments were handled to and from the internet and so forth, you had to define these characteristics on a per connector basis. The routing process in legacy Exchange always started by looking for connectors with no restrictions when attempting to calculate a route to destination. Therefore, if you didn't configure all the connections properly, it was easy to miss something and end up with the mail flow characteristics that you didn't want, perhaps with people being able to send when they shouldn't, for example. With Exchange Server 2007, these characteristics can be defined in rules set at the organization level, and that, therefore, affect all messages, whichever the route they end up taking to get to their destination. You can easily define both journaling and transport rules from either the shell or the console. Journaling rules define message handling while messages are at rest, and transport rules deal with mail flow. These rules are stored in Active Directory. Rules consist of conditions, which define the mail characteristics that will be affected by the rule. Mail that does not meet the conditions of the rule is not affected by the rule. There are lots of conditions you can define, from the simple mail is from to mail has spam confidence level of. Next, you define the actions to be taken with the mail that meets the conditions of the rule you have specified. Again, there are many actions you can select, including silently drop the message, blind copy it, and apply predefined message classifications. Finally, you can define exceptions, messages that, although they might meet the conditions, you would not want affected by the rule's actions. You can scope the rule. Internally scoped rules affect messages that are only inter-organization. External rules have either a sender or recipient who is external to the organization. Global rules affect all mail. In this way, you can quickly and easily control mail flow without needing to define it on a per-connector basis. Let's move on to discuss interoperation with Exchange 2003. Let's take a look at another demonstration. In this demo, we'll run through how to configure and enable transport rules on the hub server and how to use Mailflow Analyzer to troubleshoot Mailflow problems. Now we'll look at how to create a simple transport rule. First, you'll see which transport agents are currently running. You can do this from the shell. If you type the simple get transport agent command, you can see that the command returns four items. Both the journal agent and the transport agent are running by default. If you wanted to capture copies of email messages in transit, you can do that either by using the transport agent or by using the journal agent. Normally, you'd use the journal agent for the purpose of archiving messages, as the transport agent requires more specific configuration. We'll use the transport agent for this demo. We're going to apply a disclaimer to all messages sent to Holly. First, we create the transport rule. To do this, we go to the Hub Transport Settings in the Organization Configuration Work Center. From the Action pane, we click New Transport Rule. We type a relevant name and a valid description. In this case, we want to append a disclaimer, so we'll type that too. A transport rule consists of three elements: conditions, which determine which messages are to be trapped, an action, which determines what the agent is to do with the trapped message, and any exceptions, those messages that meet the specified conditions of the rule, but we don't want the action performed on. We define the conditions first, in this case by selecting messages sent to people, and then selecting which people, in this case, Holly. Next, we define the action, so we'll append the disclaimer and then configure the text to be appended. If you want to get fancy, you can configure the font and colors and so forth. Let's keep it clean and simple. We could define exceptions next, if necessary, but we don't need any, so we'll continue to create the rule. Now let's test it. We'll open Microsoft Office Outlook Web Access and send a message to Holly. Now let's open Office Outlook Web Access again, this time as Holly, and locate that message. The appended text is there. You can use transport rules to do far more than append disclaimers. You can create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content doesn't enter or leave your organization. First, let's generate some mail to some recipients on the internet. We'll send a message to Laura Owen over at Contoso. We have turned off the Edge server, so the Hub Transport server will be unable to deliver this to the Edge. Now let's switch to the console and go to the toolbox. It's nice that all the tools have been consolidated into one location. Let's load up the Mail Flow Troubleshooter. We don't want it to check for updates on startup, so let's go straight to the welcome screen. We'll just give the analysis a name, SMB-EX01, Mail Flow Analysis. Then we can select the systems we're seeing. Let's go for messages are backing up in one or more queues on the server. Specify both the Exchange server we're checking and the Global Catalog server to use. You can examine the basic server information report for any problems. If nothing else, it's a useful summary of the current setup. Let's proceed. The queue is in a state of retry. Now, we know this is because the Edge server is offline. Let's see what the report says. Since the report verifies this, let's see what the troubleshooter recommends we do. It says, target destination servers could not be identified. That doesn't shed much light in this case. So let's switch to the queue viewer. We can see that the connector to the Edge is in retry. Given that we have queue at the point of failure, and given that this connector leaves the organization, we've likely found our problem. If we started the Edge server, the message would reach the Edge, Obviously, from there on, it depends on whether Contoso's SMTP servers are online and whether Laura Owen has a mailbox. Let's return to the presentation. Let's move on to discuss interoperation with Exchange 2003. We've already touched on how Server 2007 supports Exchange 2003 routing groups and connectors, but we'll expand upon this now. When you run the installation process on your first Exchange 2007 server, then the computer is part of an Active Directory forest that already contains an Exchange 2003 organization, the installation process automatically detects that. It creates both an administrators group and a routing group within it to contain the new Exchange 2007 servers. The admin group is called Administrator Group brackets Random Identifier, while the routing group is called Exchange Routing Group brackets Random Identifier. You may be planning to migrate to Exchange 2007 fairly soon, in which case the degree of interoperation you need is not so great, nor is the planning quite so crucial. However, if you plan to roll out a 2007 around your organization while continuing to maintain a large 2003 presence, you need to consider things more carefully. It would make sense to configure Exchange 2007 as messaging routing backbone, because it's the more efficient model of the two. Let's look at this in more detail. Successful coexistence of Exchange 2007 with Exchange Server 2003 or Exchange 2000 Server depends on the correct configuration of routing group connectors between Exchange 2007, Hub Transport Service, and Exchange Server 2003 or Exchange 2000 Server Bridgehead Servers. When you install Exchange 2007, it's recognized by 2003 as part of the legacy Exchange organization. However, because of the differences in how server-to-server communication occurs, you must configure routing group connects to let the two Exchange versions communicate and exchange messages. Exchange Server 2003 and Exchange 2000 Server used SMTP as a primary communication protocol between Exchange servers. In Exchange 2007, the server role uses RPC for server-to-server communication and rely on the Hub Transport 7 to perform SMTP transport. As we know, legacy Exchange uses routing groups and connectors to define an Exchange-specific routing topology. Exchange 2007 uses Active Directory sites to define its routing topology and no longer needs this Exchange-specific topology. Let's examine this more closely. To support coexistence between these two routing topologies, all Exchange 2007s are automatically added to a single routing group where Exchange 2007 is installed. If Exchange 2007 is to coexist with Exchange Server 2003 or Exchange 2000 Server, you must perform the following tasks. First, configure a two-way routing group connector from the Exchange Routing Group bracket random identifier to each legacy Exchange routing group in which 2007 will communicate directly. The first routing group connector is created during installation of the first Hub Transport Server in existing Exchange organization. These connectors will let mail be routed from Legacy Exchange to Exchange 2007 and from 2007 to Legacy Exchange. When you're deciding on how you should connect the Exchange 2007 routing group to the Legacy organization, you must consider the behavior of link state routing. Legacy Exchange servers maintain a link state routing table that is updated throughout the communication with the routing group master. Each connector that will be created between the legacy routing groups is considered a link. 2003 servers determine the route a message will take in the organization by using the cost that is assigned to the connectors between routing groups as a metric. If a particular routing group is inaccessible by using the lowest cost route, the link state table is updated by the routing group master to show the state that that link is down. This data is communicated to every routing group in the Exchange organization. When the data is received, the link state table is updated and another route is calculated. Link state routing is not used by Exchange 2007 Hub Transport servers, and 2007 cannot propagate link state updates. When no Hub Transport server in a site is available, the Hub Transport server does not recalculate the route. Hub Transport servers exist in a site, messaging traffic is automatically load balanced, and a connection attempt is made to each Hub Transport server in the site before the communication failure occurs. When a connection to a site is not available, Exchange 2007 uses an IP site link cost that is associated with Active Directory sites to determine the closest site in which to queue the message. This behavior is known as queue at point failure. The queue at point of failure will be put in a retry state. If multiple paths exist between Exchange 2007 routing group and any legacy routing group Minor link state updates must be suppressed to make sure that messages looping does not occur when a route is recalculated. This can be done on the legacy bridgehead service by editing the suppressed state changes value in the HC local machine, system, current control set, services, RESVC parameters key. Assign a value of 1 and restart the simple mail transport protocol, SMTP, the Microsoft Exchange routing engine and the Microsoft Exchange MTA stack services for the changes to take effect. In terms of how messages now route, if we think about our previous example, direct relay will occur when a message is sent from user in site 11 to user in routing groups 23, site 23. The originating hub will connect directly with the hub in site 23, exchange routing group random ID. This hub will then use the routing group connector with the least cost to route to RG23. Let's see what happens with bifurcated message. With an additional recipient, RG30, the bifurcation point is site 1. So direct relay is made to a hub in site 1, followed by direct relay to hubs in site 13 and site 23. Then the least cost path is used to RG13 and RG23. Clearly, if these servers weren't present, that would change the routing process quite significantly. For example, in communication from the originator in the site 11 to recipient in RG23, the path used would now be direct relay to site 2, and then the least cost route through RG2. The server removed from site 13 would obviously have an effect and bifurcation when routing to recipient 2. But we'll leave this to discussion for now. The point is, when you utilize Exchange 2007 as a routing backbone, it's far more efficient than under 2003, while we're still retaining some of the best features, such as queue at the point of failure, delayed fanout, and so on. Well, that wraps up the presentation. Let's walk through a quick session summary. Let's take a look at how Exchange handles foreign connectors. An important point is that the following connectors to foreign systems are no longer supported in Exchange 2007. The group-wide connector, the X400 connector, and the connector for Lotus Domino Notes. If you plan to support these connections, you must continue to support at least one legacy Exchange server, the one that hosts the appropriate connectors. If you're not currently using legacy Exchange, you'll need to resort to using third-party developed connectors. The product groups has provided well-published programming interfaces and management interface in Active Directory, Exchange, and the PowerShell to enable support for third-party gateways and connectors. In fact, a company called Baldwin James has been working with the product group to take advantage of this extensible architecture and has produced an X400 messaging bridgehead for interoperability with the X400 systems. Well, that wraps up the presentation. Let's walk through a quick session summary. We started the session by examining the legacy Exchange routing topology, discussing routing groups and routing group connectors. We highlighted the benefits of the architecture, most notably queue at point of failure and delayed fanout, two features that product group has retained in 2007. We touched briefly on Exchange 5 sites to give a historical perspective. The session then introduced the new Exchange server roles, focusing on the hub and edge transport rules. We talked about and performed a demo on Edge Sync and how it can easily set up the necessary internet connections for you within your 2007 organization, and synchronize a subset of Active Directory data with the Edge. We then moved on to compare 2007 with the legacy routing architecture before examining some interesting mail flow scenarios that demonstrated how direct relay and delayed fanout work and how they benefit the routing infrastructure by consuming fewer resources. Then we looked at another demo on troubleshooting mail flow and configuring transport rules. Finally, we wrapped up the session by discussing legacy to 2007 interoperation and how to establish your 2007 service as a routing backbone in your organization. For more comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc110. More information on books, courses, certification, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, A Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In a highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft certification program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications cover SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about.
TechNet Plus subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public newsgroups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.